Everybody, I'm Eric with a K. Grateful to be here in the best damn Al-Anon meeting on the planet. Thank you very much. And tonight, you know, I just feel tickled pink. Really, I do. If you look on the inside, you'll see it. I feel so privileged to be able to say a few words first about our speaker tonight. Before I do that, let me just make a quick comment. You ever notice like all the rambunctiousness and the craziness that happens in the cake time and the way that they get us all to, you know, sit the hell down and quiet up is they read those 12 traditions, eh? It's like, note the power of the very words to shut you up, right? So I thought that was kind of cool. Chris R., I met him, I'll get to that in just 2 seconds. I met him about 13 years ago at my very first Al-Anon meeting. The scene of the crime was the Burbank 7:30 Sunday night meeting, and he was there. And I just remember coming in completely broken and feeling like there was no hope in my life for anything to change. I thought maybe if I came to Al-Anon, you know, my marriage would work out better. And instead, what happened was, people like Chris, they do what really, really great Al-Anons with recovery do. They 12-step me big time. And Chris was that guy that I turned to within the first, I think, 6 or so weeks of being in Al-Anon. I just grabbed him as a sponsor and I started doing the step work, mostly so that I could tell my wife that's what I was doing. It'll look good, right? I bought all the literature too, so it'd be on my shelf. I like looking good. but in any event, he was the guy in Al-Anon that convinced a guy like me that felt completely terminally unique that I actually belonged. And because I'm one of those guys that wants to talk himself out of Al-Anon. And Chris made it just beautifully clear to me how much I belong. And in a way, he took a guy like me who was sort of playing near the fence around the pool, you know, but didn't want to get in the pool, just playing around that fence. And he not only came across the fence and opened that gate for me, he walked me inside. And he's the kind of guy that takes his recovery everywhere he goes, including his home. And I've been at his home on many, many occasions, some of you have too, to take in a lot of different times of the year where, you know, usually families get together and celebrate. Some of us don't get to do that because of the families that we have. But he would open his doors on July 4th and on New Year's Eve and other times and help you feel welcome, help you feel like you belong. And I'd say if there's anything that he's done for me as a person is just to really feel like comfortable being with the human race. He's a beautiful man, and I'd like to introduce him now to come up and now speak, tell us your story.
I'm Chris R. For those of you that don't hang out with us at 7 o'clock, like let's rock. That didn't just come out of nowhere. There's a reason those guys call me that. In a former life, I worked with a lot of movie pirates. Yeah, I stole this hat from one of them, as a matter of fact. And somehow Eric or one of these guys, you know, Michael says he did it too, but they came up with that nickname. And I love it because it's part of the camaraderie in this place. And actually, that's almost the summary of anything I've got to say, is I went from being totally isolated to having a family and love around me and friends like I never would have imagined. So I'm done. Anyway, yeah. Didn't know I got to come to the conclusion that fast. So. Anyway, let's see. So this place saved my life. And none of my family has ever been to a meeting. I tried to take my youngest son when he was about 11. He told his mom that I kidnapped him. And he never went. The kids in the meeting couldn't talk him into getting out of the car. That's as close as anybody ever got. But the amazing thing to me is that there's days when I see recovery in them. I have three sons. I have a really close relationship with them. I feel very fortunate about that. I now have three grandsons, and we're getting closer all the time. And once in a while, my kids will call me about stuff when they're going through things, you know. And more than once, they said, they're like, one of my sons called me up about problems he's having with work and, you know, all kinds of things. And then he just sigh and he say, you know, I just learned, I just got to let that go. And I go, sounds like a good idea. You know, I may have heard that somewhere before. But I see the recovery in them. It's really kind of amazing. I heard in one of my early meetings, which I started up here, right here. My first meeting was a Windsor Club in the wrong room. I went to the AA room by mistake. And at the break, the guys were kind enough to show me down the, you know, when they realized, they said, you're in the wrong meeting. So they sent me down the hall to my first Al-Anon meeting where, you know, I was terrified that anybody would know that I was going to meetings. A counselor had given me the name of central office. I actually had this whole sequence where it's important now, but my bottom was when I realized that suicide sounded like a really, really good idea, very peaceful. And I was just sane enough to go, man, I'm really messed up and I need some help. So I called up our medical insurance, who gave me the number of counselors. Actually, I called a prayer service in there somewhere. And then I called the counselors. Some of them called me back in like an hour, and I was in her office like 2 days later. At the end of that session, she handed me a business card with a name, with a number on the back, and said, this is Al-Anon Central Office. You might want to try them out. They have meetings every day. And 2 days later, I was at the Windsor Club. In the wrong room, but I was at the Windsor Club. And that was my first meeting. And then I, very shortly after that, I started coming up here to the day meetings. Sometimes I see the folks from those meetings here, and I'm not sure now. But it was 30 or 40 women and two guys. And I kept coming back, and now I think of them like they're my sisters. You know, that was they were my Eskimos. I didn't know what I was doing there. When they talk about traditions, I thought that's the boilerplate on the contract. I have no idea what that means. Now I really love the traditions, but those were my first meetings. It was coming up here on Tuesdays and Thursdays often. I averaged, it's been 21 years now, I'm heading for 22, and I've averaged 3 to 4 meetings a week for that whole 20 some years. That's a lot of meetings, a lot of church basements. And after a while, it started to sink in. It took a long time. I said, for me, it's like the process of erosion. You know, I didn't have too many epiphanies. It was like this slow process of erosion, like water going through a rock, you know, and the rock is right here. And that's what it took. And I also remember, like in that meeting, having this moment where I had my first service commitment. I volunteered. The way I volunteered was I was sitting there quietly, and the lady next to me grabbed my arm and went, it's literature, you'll like it. You know? So I did like it. It was great. You know, you got to talk to everybody, and I love the literature. You see my stack right here. Here's my 20-plus-year-old Courage to Change. It's seen a little bit of mileage. And today, it's like a Ouija board. It tells you things you needed to know, you know? And I picked it up today, and I turned to the wrong page. And it was absolutely the right page, of course. And it was the one February 2nd where, which this year was 02-02-2020, yeah. But anyway, I used to live my life on as if I were on a ladder. Everybody was either above me to be feared or envied or below me to be pitied. God was way, way at the top. And then it says, now I've climbed down from that. I found a lot of people who decided to climb down from that into the circle of fellowship. And I love this. This line stuck out to me today. There's always a new line that sticks out for me from these books, you know. And I've seen this page for 20 some years. And it, you know, here's a new line in it. And it was, in the circle we are on equal terms, and God was right in the center, equally or easily accessible. And that really hit me there. I love this page. And I love that whole idea. One really great thing about the meetings we have here is now, we used to kind of just do it where we sat. But now all the guys have been getting up, and we form a circle which fills the room. It's a circle that literally takes up the whole room. It's beautiful. I love it. Every time we do it, it's so cool to be a part of that. And that circle idea is really important to me because that was exactly my deepest problem, I think. I came in the rooms and I was here for 3 years before I said, I think I belong. 3 years it took me. Eric's much quicker than me. And after 3 years, I went to one of our offsites. Another wonderful thing about this meeting, and I got a sponsor, Ron R. And right now, I want to give a shout out to Pat S., who started this meeting with a coffee pot and a resentment. And Ron R. and Willie's back there, and Jack, and these pioneers that started this thing. 20 years ago, I came in the room when they had the old building, and there were like 25 of us. And all these guys like gunslingers leaning up against the wall, and it scared the hell out of me. You know, it took me. But a really important thing. Oh, and thank you for the newcomers. Always, I'm glad you're here. Keep coming back. I remember being a newcomer, and you remind me of those feelings. It reminds me, you know, how far how much I've been able to accomplish in the program. But that meeting scared the hell out of me. All these guys. And I didn't fit in, you know. I just, like I said, our marriage, our life had become very isolated. That's the disease working. I've learned that is one of the properties of alcoholism. That's the family disease, that it destroys relationships. I think it's a more cruel disease than anything else, than cancer, anything. I've known people with cancer who lived to their last day happy, or at least some serenity, because they were surrounded by love. And I have seen alcoholism destroy our family and destroy people, just destroy people. And it, you know, one of the main ways it destroys us is destroys relationships. So this room is all about learning how to have relationships again. So where was I? Anyway, that's where I was when I came in. And I was scared of that meeting. I felt safer around 40 women and two guys. But one guy in that room came up to me at the break. His name is Craig. And he shook my hand and welcomed me and talked to me for a while. And that made a huge difference. I didn't go back there for a few months because I didn't want to tell anybody at home I was going to meetings. I finally, you know, said, well, I guess I'll tell my ex, you know, tell my wife, you know, what was going on. And what happened, I thought, she blew up at me and wouldn't speak to me for 3 days. And that was the kind of way that things went. I mean, I remember I wrote this down, and it was like, I'm grateful because I had a wonderful marriage for 20 years. A lot of good things, you know, quirks in it like everybody's, but I had a great marriage. I got three wonderful sons, and then it fell apart, and that's the way it goes. And I also got to the point of compassion where I realized she didn't ask for that disease. Her story included a father that I dearly loved, my in-laws. I had the most wonderful mother-in-law and father-in-law. They were just the sweetest people. But my father-in-law, you couldn't talk to him after 6 o'clock at night because he just couldn't understand you. And I didn't understand what that meant till years later. You know, he was having his highballs, and about the third one, he couldn't talk. So if you got to talk to him about a loan or, you know, fixing the car or something, make sure you talk to him before six, you know. And all these things, I had no clue because I hadn't grown up around any of that. But she didn't ask for that. And I know her story included a lot of stuff that was torturous. You know, she didn't have a room of her own. You know, her brothers had the room, the only bedroom they had, extra bedroom they had. She had the living room. Imagine what that's like for a young girl to deal with that, you know. So I know she went through a hell of a lot. I can't do anything about that. You know, I tried to be the best husband I can be. I could actually, and I tried when I was in here, you know, I was still a great enabler. So I tried to help and it just got thrown back in my face because that's the disease. And so it ended, you know. But in the meantime, I had started here. And so that terrible day, and I do remember this day was, You know, marriage is one of those days where we, our whole family was together. We actually had it at my mom and dad's half acre, you know, backyard. And there were some, you know, some freaky things. Like the other thing she grew up with, she had two brothers who were into drugs. One of them was a drug dealer. And he did some terrible stuff on her wedding day. Got drunk. He was supposed to take pictures. Got too drunk. Forgot. So they had no pictures of their family, almost. And he also gave her a really awful gift. And it was just real abusive. And I, so like I said, she didn't ask for that, you know. So anyway, that brings me to mind one moment of epiphany, which was that I would go home from work because I only lived 4 miles away, and I forgot something, or I don't know what, I came back for a book or to grab a sandwich or something. And her thing was at that point, was she would sit out on the back porch that we had with this place that it was like this awful spot to me, and it made me cringe because she had just piles of magazines and trash. And when I found out, when I was digging around, you know, empty bottles under everything. And I went back there and just said politely something about I came back for this. And it started an argument, and then it exploded. And I didn't say a thing, but because I'd been in Al-Anon for about 3 years at that point. And she said something to me, and I remember, I've repeated it, so I know this, some people will know what this means. It felt like some of these things she'd say literally felt like I felt a knife going into my gut. I mean, like cold steel actually hit me. It was just awful. And, but this time with program, I took a deep breath and I said, I'm sorry you feel that way. I really have to go back to work. And you have a nice rest of your day. And I walked out angry as hell, and I got in my car and I sat down, took a deep breath. And all of a sudden I had this moment where I thought, I remember in the meetings, they told us that when an alcoholic strikes out at you like that, you know that inside they hate themselves 1,000 times more. And all I felt was compassion for the fact that this person I loved was going through that. And I backed out of the driveway and started down the street. And before I got a block, I was whistling and I was happy going back to work. And I was thinking about what, you know, I wasn't my burden anymore. Because I'd done all I could. I was keeping my side of the street clean, you know. Oh, by the way, I brought a prop. You know, one of the tools of the program is, you know, take care of everything within your hula hoop. So I brought a hula hoop. Very important. 1995 with Big Five. This isn't bad, you know, a little hard to use, but that's the big one. I also got this one for those of us who have, you know, who reach out too far all the time. This is a kid-sized one. And on the days that even that won't sink in, I've got this one, which lights up. So, you know, to really hammer home, you know, got to stay within hula. But that, the, you know, that's hugely important. That idea, because there's a million times that I love this acronym we've got. Wait, why am I talking? You know, it's like I have learned to shut up and listen. Another thing I learned to me, I like it. I'm just full of a ton of cliches. That's what happens after 20 years of Al-Anon. You get all these stupid cliches. But the one of them was, you got two ears, one mouth. Take the hint. You know, listen. And I was terrible at listening. Terrible. Somebody start talking, and within 15 seconds of them starting, I was already coming up with my clever response, which of course meant I missed 3/4 of what they said. So in meetings, what great exercise for somebody like me. You know, I sat in here. I figured out once, the engineer side of me decided to figure it out. I said, okay, I speak for 3 minutes about once a week, and I go to 3 or 4 meetings. So that's once in like 270 minutes or 300, you know. So the odds are like, I'm only talking for like 1% of the time I'm in an Al-Anon meeting. And one thing I feel really good about is I listen a lot better. Now, really, I mean, it's not all the time, but I listen a lot better. And it's amazing what you can learn when you listen to people. and the openness, this is also about getting away from isolation. You know, as soon as I started to really listen, because I'd be judgmental. That one really interesting thing was, one of the things that got me into Al-Anon was, in those first meetings, they read Understanding Ourselves. I expect everybody in here knows it. I heard that and I went, holy crap, that's my autobiography. You know, who was looking over my shoulder to write that? I'm not kidding, I identified with every word, except the one that said, some of us are arrogant, smug, self-righteous, and dominant. I said, no. I have nothing to do with that, but the rest of it, you know. Guess what? So the listening is a huge part of that. And now, you know, this isn't the only place where I have got connection. I have a religious program I go to. I have friends I work with. And I shut up and listen. And often people that I don't think I have anything in common with, I sit there and go, just listen. And in 5 minutes, we've hit it off and we're talking about something we both love, you know, some art show or some concert or some guitar player or a book or, you know, or our kids or whatever it is. And, you know, I never would have gotten that until I got the tools to shut up and listen, you know. STFU. I'm proud to be, you know, on the campus of STFU. So I learned a lot. Now, one other interesting thing to me about about progress, okay? And I'll talk about these more at the end, but somewhere in that first year, I picked up not only the books, I got, this is my standard, Ron and I worked through, you know, Paths to Recovery, and that one's kind of beat up too. Have this line in here, the Serenity Prayer, that Ron adds the wisdom to know the difference and the patience to wait for the wisdom. I think that's beautiful. So anyway, so I pick up the literature. Well, somewhere along there, I picked up some leaflets and other stuff. And anyway, I was at a meeting Tuesday night, Burbank. And the leader at the time, at the end of the meeting, said, I would like to read this. And she picked up a pamphlet. They don't have this pamphlet anymore. And she read what they call the promises. Now they got to call it the gifts. I still call it the promises. And they read it. And if we willingly surrender ourselves to the spiritual discipline of the 12 steps, our lives will be transformed. Now, I've been at Al-Anon about 5 years then, maybe eight. I can't remember exactly. But I heard that. I started crying because I saw it coming true. I could literally go through the lines of it and go, son of a gun, that's happening. Your secrets will no longer bind you in shame. It's really happening, you know. What's the one about reality? You might find it. Our secrets will no longer bind us in shame. As we gain the ability to forgive ourselves, our families, and the world, our choices will expand. Courage and fellowship will replace fear. Just all these things. Our sight, once clouded and confused, will clear, and we will be able to perceive reality and recognize truth. And I was just sitting there crying because I was going, that's the most beautiful. That's some of the most beautiful poetry I have ever heard. Okay? So anyway, I go home. It actually was read every week after that. They decided to read it at the end of the meeting. I went home, and about a week later, I'm going through these books I have, you know, the Al-Anon books, and this piece of paper falls out that I got like in my first year at Al-Anon. I went, oh, what's this? And I opened it up. It was the promises. Somebody had given it to me in my first year, and I'd picked up and went, eh, and stuffed it away because it didn't mean anything to me. And 5 years later, those same words, it was like God talking to me to read them. So something changed, you know. And I guess it was me. I love all the guys in this room. Like I said, we're this band of brothers that we have is, it's kind of amazing. Also, Pat S., who started this meeting, because he was tired of going to meetings at 8 o'clock at night and getting home too tired and having to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. He always told this story about, like, his wife got into AA, and then he was told, go to an Al-Anon meeting. So he went, dutifully went, and hated it, and kept hanging out doing it, got a sponsor. And then one day he says to the sponsor, how long do I have to keep coming to meetings? And the sponsor looked at him and smiled and said, only until you want to. And I went, damn, that's true. I tell you what, the thing is, early in those years, I started to realize that my whole day felt better when I had a meeting to go to. Everything was going south at work, stuff at home was shit, and I'd sit there and go, thank God I got a meeting to go to tonight, or to meeting at noon. You know, it really, and after a while, you know, I had this community, and then I was going, oh, there's no, you know, why would I miss it? This is, it's true in this room, you know, and tonight, hearing all the birthdays and all, I mean, there's so much love in this room. So it's, and it's always there. We can even screw it up. I do the coffee commitment. We have trouble with that coffee machine. Well, a lot of things can go wrong, but doesn't matter because the love's always here. As long as there's two or more of us, you know, right? Actually, with one, you can, you know, now I've got a higher power. I mean, I was lucky. I always had a higher power. I remember sitting on a mountain when I was a kid and going, okay, God's here. But getting in here, it's really brought my higher power home to me. And I feel it in the rooms all the time. The other thing I'll mention about that is, you know, being of service, how huge that's been a part, working the steps with a sponsor. Ron and I are still, I just talked to him before the meeting here. He told me to wear a tie. Anyway, I forgot what I was talking about. that recovery, it's, I mean, I just know, I mean, the before Ernie, who's in our meeting, he came over to me one time and said, Chris, I think it was when I had 10 years in the program. He goes, Chris, you look 10 years younger than you did 10 years ago. That's a nice thing to hear. So, but I couldn't see it in me for a long time. I could see it in other people. I have a couple friends of mine. I remember their when they were first in Al-Anon. And I remember how torn up they were and wrecked and hurting, and their story made me cringe, the abuse and everything else they've been through. And 3 months later, they're doing coffee. They're laughing at the back. They're doing literature. They're laughing with people. And I, you know, I tell Will, I tell Reverend Willie back there, I go, get on my soapbox and go, I will show you a miracle tonight. You come with me to an Al-Anon meeting. I will show you a miracle. It's guaranteed. And it, you know, it practically is. It's like every time, you know, tonight with the newcomers, I heard that, you know, here, people talking about my life has changed and it's better, you know, it's still kind of mysterious how it works, but I know I just keep working it because it works, this shit works. I just keep seeing it all the time. I wanted to mention a couple things about our meeting and talking about doing service. I mean, these guys, what an example they've given me and all of us. So we've lost several people in the years I've been in this meeting. Scott, remember Jim, Sleeveless Steve, others. And I remember when Jim was dying, we had a meeting in his front room. They'd put a hospital bed in his front room. This is the first time I'd ever done that. But we went and did a meeting around him in his front room. He had the tubes in him and all that, and he was kind of out of it. But he with the smile on his face. And I'll never forget that, you know, what it was like for all of us to show up. And I have to tell you, inside I was going, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't really want to be there. This sounds too uncomfortable, but I did it anyway because they were doing it. And it was amazing. And this happens more than once. I had a surgery, not anything life-threatening, but a few years ago. And my son took me to St. Joe's, and we're sitting there. My sponsor walked in. So I just want to know I'm thinking about you, and I'll be taught, you know, call me when you're back home, you know, that kind of thing. One of them, the other one I remember, Domingo's not here tonight, so one buddy of ours, Bruce, got cancer and was going through a lot of chemo and everything else, and it was awful, and didn't look good. He had remission, and then he was back in, and he was down at Kaiser. And I decided to go. I called him on the phone and we talked about a bunch of stuff. And again, it was like an hour conversation. It felt good to be just of service, like listening to him. Talk about these things he loved, like about gardening. His whole community did a community garden. And it got me excited about that. And we talked about music and all this. So anyway, a few days later, I went to see him. And I show up and Domingo's there with his family. I always call him Domingo. And his wife's there and his three kids. And we're sitting around and Bruce, you know, he had a smile on his face. He didn't look so good. He was going through, I think they were taking him over across the street for chemo every day. And his wife was there. Of course, look on her face was not too, it showed a lot of the worry. And after we'd been there about 20 minutes, because of course he was getting tired fast, they said to him, you know, we'd like to sing a song for you. And they brought out song sheets of Amazing Grace. And I brought my harmonica, too. I didn't know Domingo was going to do this, but I brought the harmonica. So we all sang several verses of Amazing Grace. I won't forget that moment for the rest of my life. The look on Bruce's face was like, I mean, the love around him and the love he was feeling. You know, he knew he was feeling it, his wife too. And I brought a lot of Kleenex, but that's stuff I see in this program. You know, and I remember with Bruce, there was a night here where we were sharing, just in a regular meeting about a month later, and we were talking about him. Everybody was getting up to say, hey, I went to see him last week. Hey, I went to see him 3 days ago. And they were talking about him. Then one of the guys get up and says, I just got a text. Bruce just passed away 5 minutes ago while we were all talking about him. There's a lot of things that don't seem like accidents anymore. Oh, the other one is one of our buddies here went through a bad accident and was in a coma for a while down in Huntington. And like usual, the guys in this meeting stepped up and started going down to the hospital. And I went down to see him a couple times. First time I saw him, he was unconscious. Second time I saw him, you could talk to him, but it was hard because he'd had a lot of injury. But the funny thing was you'd walk into Huntington Hospital and come up to the counter. And the woman there, the attendant there would look up and go, oh, you must be a friend of Bill's. He's right down over, just go down and yeah, you know where he is. That was, you know, that tells you how many people were showing up. So from this group. And we've been to, you know, we've been to memorials too. We've had a few of those and, you know, that camaraderie feels really good too. Joe, remember, Mike and Randy remember Joe. Yeah, Joe passed away, and we went to his memorial, and people were going, how do you know him? Oh, we're mutual friends. There was a lot of love in that room, and it was great to be there with them. So that's, you know, that the being of service. I had to learn to ask for help. I'm doing that today. There's a lot of times I sit there and get in a conundrum, and I go, you know, you can't do it alone. Ask for help. Call somebody up, ask for help. Ask for company. You know, I use that, another good acronym, HALT. I added S on the end, it's HALTS. Okay, am I hungry, angry, lonely, tired, or sick? Or all of the above, or, you know. And it works, because I'll sit there and go, oh, that's right. I'm pissed off because that just happened with the kids. Or I'm hungry because it's been a long day, and okay. Or I'm tired, it's time to get to bed. And son of a gun, it's amazing how much my mood lifts, you know, just with those simple things. Human, guilty, you know, it's why it seems to work. It's we seem to share a lot in common. You know, more than one person I've heard say it, but to come to this first meeting surrounded by strangers and I'm going, I don't know if I really fit in here. I mean, this room, people are like 20 years older than me, and I don't see anything in common with them. And then my thoughts, everything that was spinning around in my head, in my washing machine brain, was coming out of other people's mouths. You know, some young girl, some older woman, some older guy, somebody, it didn't matter, somebody from another part of town, and they'd start talking, and I'd go, shit, that's exactly what I was just thinking. I hate that when it happens, you know. But it was after a while, you know, I stopped worrying about, am I here? Is she really an alcoholic? The denial was so thick, you know. Yeah, the bottles everywhere and everything. I don't know if she's an alcoholic. It might be mental illness. Somebody told me, well, alcoholism is a mental illness, you know. You're in the right place. But it took that 3 years to go, okay, whatever the hell's going on with her, which is not really my job to judge, I know that I fit with these people. I'm in the right place because this is helping me, and they are clearly my peeps because they're thinking like me. So, I went to the offsites. We do that now. We do it twice a year. They got so popular. Now we do it twice a year. We got a great spot out in Joshua Tree we've been going to. They have great food, thanks to the committee. And the fellowship there, because that was like putting the camaraderie, the love of this meeting on overdrive. It was like 3 days of it, you know, and we were hiking, we were doing music together, just all this, and then having meetings and meetings, some of the guys sharing, and I still love doing that. And it, you know, for all the newcomers, if you got a meeting that you like as your home group, you know, if you end up here, that I can't recommend that enough, because it really connected me. That feeling I had when I first came in was like, I don't know these guys, you know, I don't want to get too close. And that ended it, going to those. I now was clearly part of the club, and I felt like it. And I try and welcome everybody I can, you know, with that same feeling. Like I said, my buddy Craig, who came up to me at that first meeting and shook my hand, that was really important. A couple of stories about my family. So we learn here not to give advice, right? I can't walk in somebody else's shoes. Well, one day my middle son called me up and said, okay, Patrick's going out with that girl he broke up with again. I go, yeah. And this is a disaster. They were a disaster together before. It's a disaster again. You have to give him some advice. And I go, I've kind of learned that that's not usually the right path to take, you know, to start giving advice. But he was asking me, you're his dad, you know, give him some advice. You know, yeah, no, not going to happen. They did break up like a couple months later. He called me up in agony. He says, it broke up again. I just, you know, and I'm going, no shit. Couldn't see that coming. Yeah, no, I'm sorry to hear that, son. Yes. You know, thank God, that was just awful to be around them. They were fighting all the time. Anyway, and the other one I love to tell is talk about is this. Like, my family does not show how to. Well, two things. First, I did not have alcoholism around when I was a kid, period. My family hardly drank. Maybe they brought a bottle of wine out at a holiday and had a couple of sips. That was it, as far as I knew. There's a footnote to that. So I didn't know what that was like. But I got trained well as an Al-Anon, because I had a dad who was a rager, and I had a mom who would rage back. And I hated that. I remember saying, I will never, it was usually about money, but I said, I just can't, and I still can't deal with it when somebody rages. It really hits buttons in me to see that happen. And he scared the hell out of me. You know, and it's funny, he's 96 and he's still a pretty tough cookie. He's impatient. Now I can kind of tell him off gently and he listens to me some. I'm helping a lot, although that's the other thing on service. I got 3 grandkids. I love being of service, helping, you know, take care of them. And they are, you know, grandparenting is really one of the best things in life. And then I've got my parents around still. Dad's 96, mom's 93. Mom has dementia. She was diagnosed about 5-6 years ago. And she has a caregiver, live-in caregiver. You can talk to her. She recognizes all of this. But there's parts of her thinking just is gone. You know, it's like a jigsaw puzzle with pieces missing is one way to describe it. I've been to Alzheimer's meetings and things to talk about that. And it's hard. I mean, I sit there and it's really easy to slip into what's gone. And I have to remember to look at what's there. To always look at what's there, what we still got. And I love this. You know, they talk about how music affects the brain. And so one Christmas she loved Broadway musicals. So I got her a set of original Broadway soundtracks. And they have one little CD player. So I played a couple of them. So I called about 3 days later. And my dad says, I wish you hadn't got her the darn CDs. I said, what's the matter? She and a caregiver run around the house singing the songs constantly. It's driving me nuts. And, you know, so that was one. And then this one, by God, this is, so my grandfather was a banjo player, among other, like 20 other things, my mom's dad. And my grandmother was a concert pianist. Till she got married and she gave it up, like women did back then. But there was a lot of music in the family, which I, you know, recognize now how much I have his banjos, actually. Anyway, one day I found, they left us with a whole bunch of sheet music. Some of it's really old, too, like 1920s stuff. But I got this one book, and I'm going through, and I found some pieces like the Sunny Side of the Street. I can tinker out a melody on the keyboard and on her piano. So I'm sitting next to her, she's reading her book, and I'm playing, and then I found one called Wonderful One, and I start playing. It's this wonderful waltz. Wonderful One, you're the one I adore. Da, da, da. She starts singing along. She starts singing the words. And after we'd done like a couple of phrases, she goes, "That was your grandfather's favorite song." I said, "Really?" She said, "Yeah. You know, they on Friday nights, everybody would come over to our house, and Mom would sit down at the piano, and Dad would get out his banjo, and everybody'd sing the songs together." I said, "Mom, you've never told me that before. You know, what a wonderful memory to have." One of the things I did this Christmas is I have all their old pictures. I have my grandmother's album, and I have pictures of my mom when she was born. I have pictures of my grandfather when he and my grandmother were dating. You know, pictures of him in the Marines in 1917. And I've been organizing them and then scanning them. So we, and then, you know, put them on Google Plus or Google Drive, and now my whole family can see them. And I just, these memories of it, because there aren't many pictures of him. He did a lot of photography. There's very few pictures of him. And he died when I was 15, right at the point where we were starting to really connect. He helped me build a little radio, you know, and he went on vacation with us up to Oregon. I remember him telling me how much it broke his heart when my mom and dad argue. And we got home, and a month later, he had a heart attack and killed him, massive heart attack. So I never, you know, I'm sorry that happened. Would have been nice to have him around longer. I mean, I feel like a lot of times, like they're here. You know, I wouldn't have had those memories. It is something to, side note, music has an amazing effect on people. Even when, you can find stuff on YouTube where you'll see stuff like that. Where these people's memory comes back when you don't think there's anything left. So, but this was brought it home, you know. So when I go over there, and it's hard to talk to her because you get one word responses. "So are you enjoying the book?" "Yes." "Is that your favorite writer?" "Which one's that one?" "Maeve Binchy." "Okay. Would you like another one?" "Yeah, no, I've got plenty." And it just, that's as much of a response as I get. So I played it for her like this Sunday, that wonderful one again, and I'm playing it, and she said, "You know, your grandfather really liked that song." So anyway, that's it. You know, a lot of love is still there. And it's great to be of service. I sit there, my mind goes flat with names. Domingo's real name?
Oscar.
Oscar, thank you. It's crazy how that's something I lose lately. I hope it's not in the family, but... No, it's just happens at my advanced age. Anyway, Oscar had this wonderful phrase, because he was here when his mom was dying of cancer, and he was doing a lot of work with her, and he always said, "It's not what I have to do, it's what I get to do." And every time stuff gets tough with my family, that's what I think about. You know, I've taken my mom and dad traveling, thank God they can, you know, they still enjoy that. And I have to help mom, dad with a lot of financial stuff now. He gets confused about how it works, and he's not good with. He loves an iPad. One of my favorite images of all time was we got him an iPad. He hates computers, but he loves his iPad. We took it up to Oregon with us, and I have a picture of my 90-year-old dad teaching my 88-year-old uncle how to play Angry Birds. That should be an Apple commercial. You know, talk about user friendly. But so you can email him the stuff. But anyway, I have to help him with a lot of stuff. And I go, when it starts to get kind of, you know, I'm starting to get kind of up to here with it, I go, "Take care of yourself. Take care, you know, balance it. It's all about balance. And it's not what I have to do, it's what I get to do. There is no such thing as sacrifice. There is only the opportunity to be of service, and anybody who avoids it only hurts themselves." It's, I think, from the Dalai Lama, or it's Buddhist or whatever, but it really rings true. And I had my, we were up in Oregon last year. I took him up to Oregon for a wedding. Oh, that's a great story too. So I took him up and mom can't, you know, she uses a walker. She doesn't get around very well. We can help her, but she gets her, I mean, she loves to go to the mall. That's her best exercise. They'll go shopping and she loves to tool around the mall with her walker, but she doesn't move real well. So we're up at this, my cousin's daughter's wedding and they decide to have a wedding dance and to see who'd been married the longest. So 20 couples get up there and start dancing. I start filming. Dad, mom and dad, and my aunt and uncle are dancing. And of course, who was last? They got 71 years of, you know, of marriage. So naturally, everybody kind of winnowed out. And finally, it's just my mom and dad. And my cousin goes over with comes over with tears in her eyes. And I cried at that point too. And says, Chris, do you see what's happening? She's dancing. She's not just shuffling around. She's dancing. She's doing little steps and things. You know, so that comes back too, you know, with the music. It's still there. That was a beautiful moment. So again, you know, not what I had to do, it's what I get to do. What an honor to be there. Anyway, I've gotten to the point now where I talk about those promises coming through. By the way, I made copies of that, and there's a couple, like a dozen of them back on the table, if anyone wants to see it. Or you can get the book, is it Helen? No, Survival to Recovery, page 267 or 268, and it's wonderful. I'm not kidding. It's still some of the most beautiful language I have ever read. And this is a matter of seeing those things come to, you know, come true. Let's see what that says. Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, I can't see the clock. I've got rent-a-glasses on tonight. Anyway. My real glasses are in the shop. But what I wanted to end with was, this place not only saved my life is so rich today, I can't stand it. It's like, there's not enough hours in the day to do all the good things I have opportunities for. Not just the family, but I have a bunch of, I retired a few years ago, highly recommend. And now I have my own projects going on when I feel like working. And I'm enjoying that. I'm getting to do things I didn't have before. I'm working on my house. I bought that 4 years ago. Like Eric said, that was a blessing. I remember showing up there with the realtor. We'd looked for 6 months, didn't find, you know, nothing was quite right. And one Sunday he said, I got a house that's going on the market on Monday. You want to take a look at it? And I walked in there in Burbank and I took one look around and I said, I love it. And the more I walked around, the more I loved it. I loved the light and everything, but I said, this is a great house for me. I can have my family here. I can have my friends here. I can have a meeting here. And a year later, I was there, and we had our first meeting there, my sponsors group, Ron R. And there's a bunch of Ron R. guys here. We call ourselves the L. Rons. But that house is another thing. And boy, you know, house can keep you busy forever. So that, these outside projects, and a bunch of stuff that Al-Anon gave me, a friend of ours, Richard G. in program, talked me into go swing dancing, scared the hell out of me again, but I went, now I love it, go any chance I get. Ron R. got me into playing the ukulele, now I love that, I go to like every couple weeks. I've got 8 ukuleles now, so I'm getting obsessed with that. And just all these things happened, and it was somebody in Al-Anon, including like needing a counselor and going, oh, I got a great one before I try her. You know, all these things have been, but my life is, so there's a wonderful word, where's Paul? My grandmother used to write cards to us and she always signed it. She taught herself to read and write, so my Italian grandmother. So it was kind of shaky handwriting, but it said, God bless you abundantly. She loved that word. And that's the way life is today, abundant. Abbondanza, right? And there's a pizza that was named that too. But that's what it is. It's rich. Now that doesn't mean it doesn't suck. There's a lot of days that still suck, and there's a lot of awful things that happened in life. I learned to take life on life's terms. I'm learning to take life on life's terms. It's always a process. And that's where I am today. And when I have a tough day, I reach for the tools I learned in here. I reach for my gratitude list. I pick up the phone. I do the serenity prayer a few dozen times. I can do it in Spanish now too, it's just fun. And I pick up those promises and I read them and I go, it really works. This stuff really works. It works if you work it. I couldn't be more proud than to be a part of the guys here and a part of you. I'm glad you all come, you know, this, that we have this open day. God bless the newcomers and the birthday people. And thank you for letting me share.